hello everybody out there,
music video land, and welcome to another edition of This Week in Music Videos, a music video podcast about music videos, news, new releases, related topics, etc. Brought to you by your super good friends at imvdb.com, the internet music video database. My name is Adam, and with me is a special handsome boy of Brooklyn, New York, Bushwick, New York, Doug Klinger. How are you, Doug?
Doing super good, Adam, on this New York City coast.
Ooh, the New York coast.
That's us, out here.
Yeah, and if you have been subscribed to this podcast for a long time, you might have noticed our image changed, I think, in the last week, as well as our title of the podcast as well. I still had Music Video Land in there.
we're on
on iTunes.
Oh, sweet.
On the XML thing. And
is the Music Video Chats podcast going to iTunes?
It's going to iTunes. I just have to make the XML feed for it. So
sweet. Oh boy. Everyone, so all you iTunes fans, you've been missing out on a show right now.
Yeah,
you bet to get it.
Four episodes in. And speaking of that, we just posted the fourth episode of the Music Video Chats podcast. Doug, why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, yeah, we had Austin Vesely on, who last week we talked about his video for Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment's Sunday Candy music video. And Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment is a band that features Chance the Rapper, and he's in the video too. Chance and Austin go back a while, and we just talked about a lot of stuff. Austin's from Chicago, so we got some interesting insight on kind of what it's like directing a music, directing music videos from Chicago. And it was a fun chat. It was a fun music video chat.
It was a great chat. Yeah. And I that's one thing I learned a lot from this podcast and to listening to you talk to Austin. And one of the moves that I didn't know that Austin knew Chance the Rapper, which, makes a lot of sense. Chance the Rapper is from Chicago, and Austin is as well. I love Chicago. I'm glad to see, I think you mentioned in the very beginning of that podcast that he might be one of the first directors we've talked to from Chicago, which is weird because it's such a big city and we've talked to directors from all over the place, like St. Louis and Cincinnati and
obviously New York and L.A.
New York and L.A., but yeah, lots of like places around the U.S. that you wouldn't really associate with music videos, but Chicago had not been one of them up until, recently.
And I honestly think like Austin Vesely is having a big reason why anyone is even talking about music videos in Chicago. I mean, he does, because he mentions in the podcast that there is a lot of up and coming artists, young artists coming out of Chicago, particularly in hip hop and in all sorts of music. And he's kind of worked with all of them. And we had John Agustavo on, right? On the podcast,
I
right?
I don't think we had him on the blog.
Never on the blog. Okay, so even that, I think Austin though is unique in even the blog in Chicago. Like, I can't really think of off the top of my head any other music video directors who are actively working out of Chicago at the level that he is.
Is John cool. John from?
No, Chicago? I was just gonna compare it to John John in Seattle, mm-hmm. because John John worked with kind of like the whole list of Seattle artists, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis included, and they kind of like, they worked on videos together, and that's kind of part of how when Macklemore got out there, John John was getting out there as well.
So yeah, let's check out the interview with Austin. It is really great. He also talks about, you ask them, which is fun, about some of their favorite music videos, and you talk about Thriller. Talk about Criminal by Fiona Apple, which is, I think, pound for pound, one of the most mentioned music videos when you ask, like, directors their favorite, like, music videos of a certain era.
Yeah.
It seemed Mark Romanek's video for Criminal by Fiona Apple seems to kind of be the one that I hear coming up quite a bit, which is interesting.
And we also talked about Never Catch Me?
Never Catch Me.
Never Catch Me. We also talked about Never Catch Me by Flying Lotus featuring Kendrick Lamar, directed by Hiro Murai, which is a video we're pretty close to retiring from the podcast. If you remember, TRL used to retire videos after they played for too many weeks. And I think we're pretty close to that level with the Flying Lotus Heroes Flying Lotus video, because we've talked about it now on, I think, 4 episodes, maybe 5. Probably 5. And, you know, I asked the guests to bring, you know, to talk about some of the music videos that they love in addition to some of the ones that they make. And I don't give them any rules to that. And Heroes video has now, in 4 episodes, come up twice. Not to mention when we talked about it initially when it came out, and then we talked about it again in our Best Music Videos of the Year podcast last year. So it's one we've chatted about a lot. It's been unturned.
Here are my little known director.
I think
best known for his B.O.B. Airplanes video.
Yeah, that's what everyone's talking about for Hero Mariah still right now.
Just kidding. That's a great video, actually.
It is a great video. It's funny. You were going to, like, you tried to think of something obscure.
Yeah, like, I can't. That's all right.
There's not one.
Hero has some... I love the Me Time by Bus Driver video, but it's kind of funny that he directed a video for... If you're talking like the most random Hero Mariah videos, my vote would go for the Phrase Heartless cover, Heartless by Kanye West, cover, and Hero Mariah directed a video for it.
It's animated.
Animated video, yeah, which just seems...
Well, I think he might have animated it as well.
Exactly, Hero Mariah is an artist as well. I was just talking with some people today about B.O.B. and how he's taken a turn for... the gangster.
Oh, tight. I'm excited to see how that fully develops.
Because he's taken a hardcore turn, right? Hasn't he?
I don't know.
Okay, so you haven't been following B.O.B., so we'll cut this conversation short.
Okay, that's fine.
So
yeah.
We should also...
I don't know.
We should mention that today is a special day.
Big day.
April 23rd, 2015.
The day of our Lord.
The day of our Lord. AC or AD.
AC.
Hold on. I thought it was after Christ, but it was after AD.
Chase.
After death. Year of our Lord, and this is exactly 10 years to the day, I believe, of the first video being uploaded on YouTube. Big day.
I love that the first video ever uploaded to YouTube, because it's going to be something that gets, like, this is 10 years and 20 years, 25 years, like 30 years. We're going to keep pointing at it. And the video, the original upload video, is just a dude joking about elephant dicks.
Yeah. It's just something like dude. It was Jawed. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Jawed Karim. And the title is Me at the Zoo, uploaded on April 23rd, 2005. And the reason that this is significant, the video is super dumb. It's like 5 seconds. It's like 19 seconds that has been viewed like 21 or 22 million times. And you know, we've talked a lot about YouTube in relation to YouTube's kind of proximity to music videos and the role that YouTube has played as a platform for music videos in the last 10 years, which I don't think can really be overstated. I think you really can't have a conversation about music videos in the last, you know, in this decade without talking about YouTube. They've been inextricably linked, and you know, you might say, well, what about Vivo? Well, Vivo was born out of YouTube.
Yeah, right.
Vivo uses, and I still believe uses, YouTube's infrastructure. It is basically like its own, like, you know, brand of YouTube in essence. So, you know, YouTube has really been the major player in this, in terms of, you know, that's where the major views are for music videos, and that's a platform that has really had an impact on how music videos are seen and heard in its technological advancements. I mean, you look at this Me at the Zoo thing, it's a shitty quality, terrible audio. But the kind of dream of YouTube and the whole appeal of YouTube was that it was a platform that took all the technical barriers out of video, and music videos just totally ran with that. I mean, it's amazing.
Right. And we've talked, like you said, extensively, kind of like how YouTube, essentially had resurrected music videos from being like essentially a joke, like something that you had to, you know, go to, like, you put an enhanced CD into your disk drive in order to watch. And so, yeah, it is like a big day. Like, this is a big day for music. It's funny, though, to think about, because YouTube wasn't immediately, like, pumping out great quality level. Like, that, we're not 10 years. We haven't been in 10 years of great streaming quality. We've just been 10 years of, like, this, the technology existing.
Right, because YouTube, I mean, originally was Flash. And, you know, if you're talking about, like, the platform wars of the last 10 years, you know, Flash was a platform that was, you know, adopted by YouTube as you know, a video format. And then Apple really kind of put a stop to that by, you know, pretty much flat out refusing to, you know, completely refusing to include Flash on any of, you know, the most popular devices ever made, such as iPhone and iPad, and any iOS devices. They claimed, you know, Flash has notoriously been very resource intensive and would drain batteries. So, you know, YouTube has gone through a huge evolution, you know, between that first video and now, of making incremental improvements. And I think one of, like, the, you know, if you look at, like, the press coverage of this, you know, 10-year event, a lot of it is about the other types of content that YouTube has created, like, you know, the Tyler Oakleys of the world. And a lot of, like, people very hackishly have been like, oh, cat videos, which were sort of like the tone of the coverage around YouTube in 2006, 2007. I kind of am disappointed when people take that tone of like, oh, get some cat videos on YouTube. You know, it's, the platform is leaps and bounds away from just, you know, funny animal videos. But they really haven't really mentioned music videos at all, which is kind of a shame, because that's, like, if you look at the top 25, the only thing hanging around except music videos is Charlie Bit My Finger.
I don't understand why music videos aren't a bigger topic of conversation when people talk about YouTube, knowing that that fact is out there. It's just so weird that that is something that just kind of just gets unacknowledged.
I think it's partly because there's no real, like, human interest side to it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, because nobody wants to hear about how music videos are popular again, but they really they would love to hear about what the Charlie Bit My Finger kids are like now.
Well, right, because just like I think you mentioned this as part of your as part of the talk that you gave at Sprockets last year, that you were the cover of People magazine's, like, Person of the Year was you because of YouTube, like, was supposed to give everybody the opportunity to be a star and to be out there and to broadcast themselves.
In 2006,
and, yeah. Yeah, 2006. And so, like, I think people still are holding on to that as what that's what YouTube is. And that's kind of why people just will default to cat videos for YouTube as well, because, you know, that's what it was kind of billed as when it was, like, really exploding. And to be fair, a lot of it still is that stuff, and that stuff is still massively popular on that platform. But there is plenty of, like, you know, not that stuff on YouTube as well. I mean, everything is on YouTube.
And, you know, there's sort of a myth, I think, of this idea that, you know, the stuff that we create, you know, amateur stuff, or, you know, like, low budget stuff, was going to take over the world. And that's the dream of, you know, you are the Person of the Year 2006, this new idea that we were going to watch each other and we were all going to contribute to this, you know, big pool of content, and that was going to be the way we're going to entertain ourselves. And then, you know, the next year is the first year of, you know, the new golden age of television, with the premiere of Mad Men, that kind of knocked the window to that a little bit. But I think there is even in music video circles persists this myth that the stuff that just drove people absolutely insane and was so insanely popular were the things that grew out of that, like the Here It Goes Again video. When, you know, in reality, when you look at the numbers, I mean, Miley Cyrus videos of that era, you know, YouTube era, I think that's, you know, 2006, 2007, you know, blew that video out of the water in terms of views. I mean, Miley Cyrus, somebody who, you know, was, you know, making huge waves in music videos in 2013, you know, we tend to forget that she dominated YouTube for a lot of, you know, a few years with, you know, with pre, you know, you know, pre-tongue-out Miley Cyrus of music videos.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, the recent stuff has been, like, what everybody talks about, but the reason they're talking about it is because how different it is from all the other stuff that she was doing that everyone also knew about. And so, yeah, no, people do kind of forget that stuff, even though it's, like, the context for why they're freaking out now about what she's doing.
Not to say that those... You know, the treadmill video, the Here It Goes Again video, wasn't important or wasn't interesting. It just wasn't the most popular. And people tend to forget that.
Well, because here's what happens. OK Go is different. But, like, in terms of, like, the person that came out of YouTube, that, like, the nobody person who became a star, like, that only – it's, like, such a fleeting thing. Like, the things that have longevity on the internet video in general is – the stuff that is not just a one-time punch, you know what I mean? Not just something that's going to be one time. Like, it's something that's, like, cultivated and brought and, like, worked on and built upon. And that's what pop stars do, and that's what musicians do, and that's why music videos, like, that's why you see multiple artists several times on that top 25 list.
Katy Perry.
Yeah, like Katy Perry's in the top 10 a bunch of times, as is Psy. And, you know, they, like, it's a, they build something versus, you know, the very, like, fleeting fame of, you know, Chocolate Rain or anything else that just, like, pops up and then goes away. And those people try to, like, hang on to the stuff, hang on to the fame that came from that one thing. But, like, it can't really translate elsewhere. The only time, like, the only things that translate into other videos, excuse me, other success on YouTube is people working on it. And, like, the success was part of a larger plan and it didn't happen on accident. The same thing with Vine. You know, Lil Terrio gets super famous for saying "Ooh, kill him," and that's all people know him for. And, you know, you can't do anything else after that. And nothing translates off of Vine. So, not to take the conversation too far away, but it's just, like, all very fleeting, this stuff of, like, this, like, you fame.
And I think that's why, you know, bringing it back to the media coverage of YouTube's 10-year anniversary, I think that's why they shy away from music a little bit, because it does have that music element. It does have this entire other industry that is brought in, that I think for a lot of people looking at, like, who want to believe in the original dream of YouTube, kind of taints it a little bit. You know, bringing in this entire other industry that has brought massive popularity to music videos and brought, you know, hundreds of millions and billions of views to music videos, it definitely puts a wrench in that narrative of, you know, the original dream of YouTube. But, you know, when you think about it, it's funny that it's 10 years, because I always, you know, now we kind of think of YouTube as always being there. We kind of think of Facebook as always being there. When Facebook was, you know, a year or two ahead of YouTube.
Neither of them were there when we were in high school.
Exactly, yeah. These things, you know, I can remember being a year older or a year younger than Mark Zuckerberg and, you know, being a sophomore in college and just getting the Facebook a few months after it came out and just being so excited and just in awe, kind of. And that, you know, seems so quaint now. Like, I was just looking through a slideshow of Apple.com homepages from the last, you know, from when the website started until now, and just thinking of, you know, looking at a webpage of, you know, from 2003 and looking at how old it looks.
Right.
Or looking at some of the original, like, you know, what Twitter looked like in 2007, and just thinking, like, oh my God, like, how did I forget that? We have such short memories now. And we have such short memories for, like, how good we have it in terms of a platform for music videos. I mean, if in, you know, 10 years ago, if you had told me, you are going to have a platform that is high definition, with, you know, amazing quality sound, basically on demand wherever you want it, even over a cell phone network. It right. would have sounded like science fiction.
The fact that you like can bring video with you in your hand all the time, like, and the fact that people are doing that more and more, like a massive rate, is also something that like we would have like never like perceived in our life. And it's just insane.
It is, and I think about it when I see the little LTE thing on my phone, where I remember having the first iPod Touch and sitting in a bar in Chicago. I can't remember who I was with. It was a girl, and we were we were sitting there in a bar in Chicago, and we were mooching off the Wi-Fi at the bar, or maybe we might have been on the Edge network. Anyway, we're on the Edge network, and I don't know if you remember the first iPod Touch.
Yeah,
it was, you know, it looked like an iPhone kind of.
But there wasn't an iPhone yet.
There wasn't an iPhone. I don't even know why I bought it. I just thought it was so super cool.
Because you had an iPod regular already, and right. this was like the next one.
And the I don't think the iPhone had come out yet.
I really don't think it did. I don't remember though.
Yeah, and we were just sitting there, and I just remember thinking, and then we brought up Facebook.com. And it wasn't the mobile version of Facebook, because they didn't have that yet. It was just like the full version of Facebook.com that just loaded up on there.
Right.
And it took, you know, 10 seconds maybe to load, but thinking like, oh my God, like I'm in a bar and I'm on Facebook.com. Like, how ridiculous is this? And now if my Spotify skips while I'm running on my, you know, my LTE network, and I'm, you know, streaming songs over it, I'm like, God damn it. Like,
you're like, what is this? What? I have such a terrible life that my music on any music in the whole world that I just think of, I can press my pocket and it appears, is a little fuzzy right now.
And the same thing with music videos. Like, we were sitting in the MoMA, a few weeks ago, Alex Lee, a brother, and I, you were there as well. I think you're in the bathroom.
Probably.
And we were talking about our favorite music videos, and Alex just brought up the fact that FKA Twigs is the dancer at the end of Time to Dance by The Shoes, starring Jake Gyllenhaal, which is one of my favorite music videos. And I was like, no way, really? Because I just didn't know that. There on LTE, just pulled it up, and we watched the video.
Right.
And paused it, and we were like, that is FKA Twigs. And just that ability... you know, music videos aside, is pretty incredible.
And that's how everybody's watching videos now. That's like everybody just now watches videos on their phones. That's like the place. It's just going to happen more and more. And you know, the change that YouTube made, like you mentioned, away from Flash, is the reason that's happening. And that's changing the way people are watching videos right now. Like it is like a massive trend towards mobile.
A massive trend towards mobile and everything, definitely. And I kind of thank Apple for doing that, because, you know, it's forced providers like YouTube and forced other providers to support HTML5, support you know, slightly more open standards for video, maybe we could end the conversation by talking about, I think, the one biggest overlooked YouTube performance upgrade that barely is a footnote in their history, but I think was so massive for music videos. And I think this was in 2007 around, and that was upgrading from mono audio to stereo. And anybody who listens to music will know that it's, you know, super tough to listen to something on when it's crappy audio. And YouTube did this right around what I think we would consider the very cusp of the new renaissance of music videos, right before the single ladies era of music videos in 2008. Right. And I think that made such a huge difference, to be able to go and have a platform where you could see the video. And yeah, it's 2008, so maybe you're looking at it in 480p, you know, no HD yet, but the music sounds good. And if you want to play it again, you can put on headphones, and it's not a huge degradation of quality. You can still, you know, jam out to it. I mean, I think that's, it's, in my mind, it's tough to underestimate that when it's really, like, people would look at that as, in a timeline of YouTube upgrades and think, who really gives a shit.
Yeah, no, but it's very valuable, and it's valuable for the most popular, the most played content, and probably the most ad revenue generating content.
AKA on lyric their videos.
yeah, dude, those are like, and the cost into those things versus what you'd have to put into a music video, even though oftentimes you're not putting a ton of money into music videos either, is fractions of the cost. And so, yeah, lyric videos, or sometimes they just do audio, official audio releases. That's a new thing. Like, that's a new thing you're seeing now on Vivo accounts, is people just releasing official, they're calling it official audio, and it's just the official, like, it's just the song and the album cover. Super fun.
It is super fun.
I mean, it's not new for YouTube, but it's new for Vivo, and like new within the last year and a half or something. And so, yeah.
Gotta get that sweet ad revenue, baby.
Ad Reeve. I call it Ad Reeve.
Well, you're a trendsetter, really. Let's be honest.
Tastemaker.
We're both tastemakers. We make taste.
We fixed it up. You mentioned MoMA, though, right?
Yeah, we should talk. Should we talk a little bit about our MoMA experience?
Yeah, let's talk about it. And should we gripe about not being able to get into part of it?
We were how
yes. V-late. I mean, not super late.
Not super late, but we were.
We got there in like the first quarter of the day.
Right, and MoMA doesn't. So there's two. How many parts are this Bjork exhibit? There's
technically three, but one of the things that they count is just her instruments that were in the lobby.
Oh, okay, yeah, which was really cool. That was fun. They have a kind of a self playing piano, but some self playing instruments that were interesting. Yeah. But then there's the if you've ever been to the MoMA, you know, it's, for people who are afraid of heights, it's terrifying because it's like five stories and it's all kind of open in the middle. And on the second floor, they have this blacked out room that you have to get in line to get into. And it is playing over and over Bjork's music video for
Blacklake.
For what?
Blacklake.
I thought you said Blackleg for a second. Sorry, I blanked on that. Blacklake, and I'm having some trouble tonight. And so you walk into this room, and it's a room that has been specifically set up specifically for this music video, I believe. It has kind of like these galactite type fuzzy things hanging from the ceiling for sound baffling. But there's two screens, two very wide screens, one on either end of the room, and just a really killer audio setup.
Yeah, and the video is directed by Andrew Thomas Huang,
Who has directed videos for Bjork, such as Mutual Core and Family. We've talked extensively about Mutual Core on this podcast.
And we also interviewed Andy about the video when it came out for the blog, on our website blog.
And so you walk in this and into this environment, and first of all, it's
an environment that you've never been in to see a music video before.
Never been in. And we've seen music videos in theaters, from just sort of ramshackle theaters to like very well appointed theaters,
to bars,
to everywhere between.
Theaters. Yeah, a lot of theaters, a lot of bars, a lot of just like open rooms with a screen.
And this was incredible because you waited in line for it, which, mm-hmm. at the MoMA, which I thought was
a constant line. There's a constant line.
Constant line, which is incredible. And it was just really fun. Like, I've never waited. And I mean, I always think about South by Southwest 2013. When we were like first in line for the music video showing, because we were the only people at South by Southwest. Like
the, we went and got the advanced screening. We got
advanced screening tickets for the music video thing. Portion.
They're like, you want it for what?
Yeah, they're like,
that's it? You don't want it for, okay. You can
we were
have
like
that.
There early to get advanced tickets.
Basically got made fun of by everyone who was also there at 11 a.m. to watch music videos with us.
Yeah, which is tough, a tough thing to achieve, but we did it. And so it was really neat, you know, it was a Saturday at the MoMA, so super crowded, and like these people were you know, coming in and watching this music video. And the other thing is that Bjork's music as of late has been so, you know, whether or not you enjoy it, you know, recreationally, very, really sonically powerful, I feel like.
Yeah.
Her voice, to me, has never sounded quite as powerful. And to hear that in, like, a room constructed to experience sound in that way was pretty incredible. I really, really like enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, and it's. I think it's also worth mentioning that there's like, it's just an open room. There are no seats, and we got there, and people were, everyone was sitting on the floor. But that I'm not convinced that that's always how it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could be different. Like, there are no like instructions on like, here's how you watch this video. You just kind of like enter this cavernous space essentially with all of these crazy looking things on the wall and two screens, and you don't really know where to sit and where to look, you know. And I feel like it's pretty interesting that I like the effect is still just as good kind of wherever you are in the room.
Yeah, you guys sat down. You and Alex sat down. I stood up because I got in really late. You had to actually like tell the dude that.
Yeah, you got cut in, you got cut in
I
line.
I got in front of line. I'm a polite Canadian, so I did not tell the nice man who cut in front of me. Because it's one of those deals where the line has two parts.
And, he had a break in it.
And the MoMA staff was not exactly... very
the MoMA staff is probably so fucking pissed about this thing. It is probably like, I feel like Bjork is, this Bjork exhibit is bringing out slightly different crowds than what the MoMA is normally bringing in on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, really? I mean, I don't know about that, but
I just, maybe not different and maybe more, just more.
Yeah,
like I think it's just like a crazy popular exhibit. The fact that like we didn't really tell the full story, but like there isn't a separate exhibit like after seeing Andy's music video, then you can go into a different room where like kind of all her other music videos are just on repeat. Mm-hmm. They're on loop there. And then there's an actual like walkthrough exhibit where you see like the swan dress and a bunch of like Bjork artifacts and stuff, I'm sure. And you like have to listen to like the headphones the whole time as you walk through it. And because of that, it sells out very quickly, to the point where we got there like 2 hours after the MoMA opened, 6 hours, 8 hours before it closed, and that was already sold out for us.
And it was, you know, we're people that have, I mean, we started IMVDB in, you know, with really zero experience, or zero... credibility, I guess is the right word, in music videos, just sort of two people that, you know,
made a website.
Yeah, just made a website and really like loved music videos a lot.
Right.
And we have been not fighting, I would say, but like advocating on the part of music videos being like a part of the conversation of art for a while and being a compelling platform. And it was really cool to like, you know, we tooled around the MoMA for quite a while and got up to the top floor where they have some interesting exhibits on like South American modern architecture, and just like looking down and seeing, you know, still a line for this room where this music video was playing was really neat. It was like, you know, in this place where you can look at an exhibit on architecture and look at The Starry Night by Vincent van Gogh and look at, you know, a dress that Bjork wore and also see a music video is really, really neat. I loved it. It was really, really... And Andrew, we should talk about this video because...
Yeah, we definitely should.
Andrew did such an amazing job with this video. If you've seen Mutual Core, it is nothing like Mutual Core in the sense that it is not so effects heavy.
Right.
But it is, I guess the best way I could describe it is like very visceral and very, very compelling.
And it's that is all heightened a lot by the room that you're watching it in. It's not just like when you're in a theater watching a music video and you get like this kind of like, oh, this is nice. Like this is nice because this makes this feel like I'm watching a film. And so that's the value of watching like most music videos in a theater. And like maybe you get more out of it being on a screen. But like a lot of it is just about like viewing it in a place that you view like actual cinema. But like this atmosphere, in addition to the fact that it is great that there was like a huge line outside of it all day, like the room that it takes place in really elevates the music videos, and it really like gets you to lock in, and it really like heightens the sensation of the video.
And so the video, it kind of centers around Bjork in a cave. If you're familiar with Bjork and her love of Iceland and the scenery of Iceland, then you will be at home and familiar with some of the themes of this video. It's basically kind of her and kind of like her environment and nature. There are a few parts where there are some visual effects, but those are kind of very secondary to the concept of this video.
And stuff to describe. They happen in the very like back end of the video. And it's a back burner. It's pretty long. It's like 11, 12 minutes, something like that. Like it feels pretty long. Maybe not 11, but
yeah, I would say like 6 or 7 minutes, maybe. Yeah. And Ari Robbins, who has been on this podcast, did the Steadicam work for this.
Right.
Fantastic Steadicam work. And it's tough to describe. It's just sort of an experience. It has not come out online yet.
No, and I wonder if it will, because the two screen element of the video definitely comes into play for significant portions of the video. It's the same thing on both screens, but not all the time. And when it isn't, it adds another layer to the experience for sure. And it kind of it plays with perspective. When you're sitting on the floor, you're kind of like forced to look around and like turn your head back and forth and just to kind of see what's going on behind you. But it's still like I've seen it twice now, and I've been kind of in different places in the room, and I had different experiences kind of where I was sitting, but neither was better than the other. They were just kind of like, you know, slightly different based on where I was placed in the room, which like is pretty weird to like say about a music video. It's like, oh, I was watching this Katy Perry music video, but then like I turned my chair a little bit and like it was completely different.
And another funny, interesting thing is there is, like I mentioned, if you've ever been to the MoMA, it is a significant number of stories, I think 5 stories, but like this open area in the middle. And they had this massive projection of just a few seconds of the video for Big Time Sensuality from 1993, right, directed by Stéphanie Sadanoui. Black and white video, which was really neat. It just like felt like Bjork had taken
it. It was a very iconic MoMA Bjork video. It's also a Bjork video that was shot in New York City.
It is, yeah. If you've ever seen it, she's like on a bus or like a
kind flatbed, of maybe?
Flatbed, kind of like, yeah, going around. Stéphanie said, I don't even know how to pronounce the last name, Sadanoui, is a music video director that we have not talked about on this podcast that much, has directed some of my favorite and I think some of the most interesting videos of like the 90s and early 2000s, such as Ironic by Alanis Morissette, Give It Away by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Discotheque by U2, which is not maybe high on a lot of people's lists, but I
but it is on yours.
It is on mine, and Mysterious Ways by U2. Just a lot of like classic 90s and really early 2000s videos.
Can I get a little she moves in mysterious way?
I think you just did it.
Okay.
But anyway, I think this, you know, we're not, I'm not really that sad about missing seeing Bjork's swan dress and stuff like that. That wasn't really what I was there for. I really wanted to see the music video proper. And it was great. I just was super, Andrew did such a fantastic job. Everybody on the crew did a great job. And it was just like, I feel like it's not being heralded as like a watershed music video moment, but I kind of feel like it was. I definitely felt like something, you know, the art world kind of embracing music videos in a way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, it is that. And you know what? The exhibit overall has had not had the greatest reception in some areas, in some places, I mean. The music video itself, I don't think that that's the case for.
I think that's Bjork. She's a little divisive as an artist, I think.
Yeah, but what I mean is I haven't heard much negative about the in terms of people's reaction to the video mm-hmm. itself. The thing that is being reacted to negatively is like you mentioned Bjork herself, but also the part that we missed, the part yeah. that we didn't see. Although there is also, I think there's something that Andy did in there too, a virtual reality experience video mm-hmm. as well that we did miss out on one day.
One day when I'm back in New York. We had a fun time in New York and
we did a little dancing. No, we didn't do any of that.
thanks to Alex Lee of Brother for hanging out with us. We ate at an amazing tea room and I had a meal that I still think about frequently because it was so good.
Wow, that's sweet. That's cool. And then we went to the Freedom Tower, remember that?
Yeah, I wanted to see the Freedom Tower. I'm sorry. I've never
Yeah, I wanted to see it too because of the Jinx. You ever watch the Jinx?
I'm getting into it. I'm on HBO
now. Yeah, me too. Hey, free month. First month free.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Because I got to have my Game of Thrones. And speaking of Game of Thrones, should we get into this week's music videos?
Great little angle. Great little Seggy. We call them Seggies here.
Do you know what Game of Thrones connection we have here?
I do, in the Sia video.
Yes. Do you watch Game of Thrones?
Nope.
Well, you're missing out.
That's what they tell me.
Yeah, I'm a big Game of Thrones guy.
I do want to watch Silicon Valley, though.
Silicon Valley sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, but let's... Fire meets gasoline.
That's right. So I think this means that we're officially done with the Sia. I guess I shouldn't say officially done, but it feels like we're done with the Sia Maddie Ziegler.
This definitely definitely done with the trilogy. This definitely represents a separation from that, at least like narrative that was established in those three videos. But to think that Sia and Maddie Ziegler aren't going to work together again would be silly to think about because it's definitely going to happen.
You think that like in 30 years we could go on a cruise and like Sia, it'd be like a Sia and Maddie Ziegler cruise?
You'd be like the 311 cruise that goes on now and stuff.
I'd go on a 311 cruise. I don't even know a 311 song, but I'd totally go on a 311 cruise.
I don't know them either, but they probably sound beer. Yeah, a lot of light beer, a lot of bros.
So this song is called Fire Meets Gasoline, and it's got directed by Francesco Carozzini, mm-hmm. Who has directed videos for like Beyonce. He did the Jealous video for Beyonce. He did Ultraviolence by Lana Del Rey. He also did the Pink Print movie, which we will not talk about.
He co-directed that with Taylor Cohen, right?
Yeah. Right. So Fire Means Gasoline stars Pedro Pascal, who is, if you're a Game of Thrones fan, you know as Oberyn Martell from the fourth season, who met, spoiler alert, definitely the most traumatic death of a character that I've ever seen on TV. And I think many people would agree. So it's kind of weird seeing him. I mean, you have to kind of be a Game of Thrones watcher to to understand how like weird it is to see him in anything else, especially after how he was disposed with in Game of Thrones. But here he is.
It's funny though how like this is such a spoiler culture. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen a single article about this music video that doesn't talk about the fact that he's got his head smashed.
Well, he had his anyway.
Every fucking article written about this music video did a spoiler alert head smash line.
I mean, it wasn't smashed. It was exploded by the mountain. Exploded his head with his bare hands.
Okay, so whatever.
It's everything that led up to that. That was it's gets complicated. But yeah, I agree that in a spoiler culture. I think if you really need to not have spoilers, you have to. It has to be. There's like a 48-hour window. Like anything that aired is fair game.
Well, yes and no. If you're in a conversation with someone and they're like, "Oh, I haven't seen that yet. Do you mind not talking about it?" You're like, "No, you're out of the 48-hour zone, bro. Fucking suck it up." But like, yeah. I agree on the internet that you have to be able to talk about shows. Like, if people are like, "Yeah, I don't want to know what happens at the end of Sopranos," like, deal with it.
And then the other person that's in this is Heidi Klum, she's a model, of course, but of Project Runway fame.
This is the only place that where Heidi Klum's getting second bill for talking about this music video.
Yeah, I mean Heidi Klum
on the website, she's second bill too. Whoever credited this, it wasn't me.
I mean, I have a wife that is a longtime fan of Project Runway, which is a great show. I would say I've seen many seasons of Project Runway, which Heidi Klum, it's her show, and she's on there with. She's one of the, you know, judges slash...
Yeah, she's a super, super, super model, though, before that. Like, Victoria's...
Yeah, but if I didn't watch that show, I don't know if I would have seen or heard from Heidi Klum in many... She was married to Seal, I know that.
Yeah, but she was, like, Sports Illustrated cover model. Mm-hmm, yeah. Like, a couple of times, right?
Like, 15 years ago, 20 years
ago. Right, yes, definitely. And you're right. Like, the show is definitely why she's, like, continued to be famous. But, like, she was definitely super famous for a while. But you're right. The show is a big deal.
So she's in this video, and it's tough to describe because Pedro Pascal and Heidi Klum's characters are lovers in this, and there is this dichotomy between them, kind of like having some lovey-dovey moments, and her, you know, kind of acting at the theme of the song, which is pouring some gasoline in a house and setting it on fire, and you can kind of see these scenes of them in happier times, you know, hanging out in this house, and then it switches to these shots of that part of the house in flames. Now, the thing is, if this was any other video, especially a country music video, looking at you, country, then you know, you could kind of spot the resolution of this from a mile away, like he cheated, or I don't know. Probably cheated. He cheated, and she's Heidi Klum's character sort of getting revenge. And kind of the twist at the end of the video is she walks out to him, and he's just like standing by the car, you know, watching, obviously complicit in this, you realize. And then they have a hug.
And she's got the Sia wig on.
She's got the Sia wig on quite unnecessarily.
So it's interesting that you talked about this video and you didn't mention Heidi Klum underwear once because. This video doubles as a campaign launch or campaign, you know, fashion video for Heidi Klum's Intimates, which is her underwear brand, which makes sense. I mean, obviously she was a Victoria's Secret model, I think, and so she can sell underwear too. But like, she's in underwear in about like 70% of this video. Just kind of like rolling around in underwear, walking around in underwear, and there's even like a close-up on an underwear tag.
Yeah, the moment where I realized, because I didn't know Heidi Klum had an underwear line, the moment I realized that was when we saw the tag.
Lingered. And it's like not like it's – so Adam, you and I were talking about this before the podcast, and you mentioned, you know, like lots of music videos have – product placement, and you know, we here at IMVDB fully embrace that and kind of support it, because you know, you got to keep music videos going, and you know, got to pay for them one way or another, and they put product placement in everything, you know, you got to kind of deal with that. But this is like when Sia tweeted this video, like it's tweeted as like her talking about it as a campaign for the underwear line.
Yeah, which is a little odd.
It's a little odd.
Yeah, especially because Sia's previous music videos up until this point have been such like there's somebody in the background screaming art.
Right.
Over and over again.
Right.
Not, there has not been any whiff hint of any artist or any like commercial involvement at all.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, it'd be funny if like in the Elastic Heart video, Maddie Ziegler just like pulls out a coconut water and is just like, you know, refreshing in the corner.
Like, look like at the very end, like turns and looks into the camera and drinks coconut water. Like. Just like direct.
I mean, that concept is funny because it's so alien to like the whole ethos of those videos.
Yeah, but like, you know, like just as easy of a joke would be like if Maddie Ziegler turned to the camera and was like, "This leotard it was brought to you by," and this is essentially that. Like if you were gonna say like the opposite end of the spectrum of like a high art music video, like your joke response would be like, yeah, it's not an underwear commercial, but this is an underwear commercial, like physically is an underwear commercial also. And it's so weird, like maybe like it just seems so unexpected. I can't understand why, like, because it's not just like they licensed this Sia song, this is on Sia's Vivo account. And you know what I mean? Like, it would be like if they just licensed the Sia song, like, that's a totally different conversation. But like, this is, it's just weird. I don't understand how this all happened, how any of this happened.
Well, I think it's important to mention that, you know, we've seen some music videos where, like, I mean, if you're watching a certain type of music video, let's just say, you're counting down the seconds until you see the Beats pill. Right, so you're like, well, here it is. Like, I'm not gonna buy a Beats pill, but that was a good try. And or
I actually did. I bought a Beats pill,
really,
specifically because they advertise in music videos, and it was my way of supporting the industry.
Oh, well, very nice, very good. How was? I didn't see it when I was at your place.
It's in my bedroom, but I've also bought Beats headphones, and they're garbage headphones. The earbuds specifically, garbage earbuds. But the Beats pill works fine.
Let that be a lesson to the rest of you.
You don't see earbuds in a lot of music videos either.
No, not really. Except in Party Rock Anthem. They're in Party Rock Anthem.
Oh well.
So
see what happened to them.
I mean, this music video is interesting and unique in the sense that that one little tag shot is kind of... I know that she's in her underwear for a lot of it, but if you don't have that context, if that tag wasn't, like, in your face for that 1 second, you would probably just read that as just, like, oh, Heidi Klum's in some underwear. I mean, it is a video that takes great pains to be... as non-commercial as possible, but then it's kind of recontextualized by these tweets by Sia saying, you know, like, check out Heidi Klum's collection.
It's reinforced. It's like, by the way, like, if you didn't see that tag.
Which almost, like, is worse, kind of, I feel like.
Just make a fashion video. Just make a fashion video about underwear. You know, I see great fashion videos all the time. Ace Norton, who's a really fantastic music video director, has kind of like recently transitioned into fashion videos. Like, he comes out of the fashion video every couple of months, and he hasn't done a music video. You know, he's done like one in the last year and a half, 2 years. So you can make a great fashion video, or you can make a great music video. You can't do both at once and have it really work, because what they ended up doing is just shoving 70% product placement into like a mediocre music video concept.
I would say it's like But the overt product placement is so small that it makes everything else worse, I feel like. It just feels rather it be out in the open than it being so, like, somebody, like, under, you know, someone still put an envelope.
The way they try to do Beats Pills, the way it's like, oh, yeah. Like, this artist just wakes up with a Beats Pill.
Yeah. Like, and you're like, oh, well, there it is. Of course they're trying to sell me these fucking pills, these Beats Pills again. They're always trying to do that. Let me watch the video.
Right.
And here you're like, oh, like, I've been, like, I sat down to see a music video expecting, you know, somebody screaming art in the background, and now I realize I'm just in a commercial. And it's a really blurry line, but it's a messy line for Sia to walk, and it just feels a little weird.
What a fucking trick. What a fucking jokester trick is what it is. It's a jokester trick. It's what it is. It's a jokester trick. And it's because honestly, without the subtle, like, without that, like, you're ready to tuck in and be like, well, this is Heidi Klum. She's an underwear model. Like, she's in underwear in this music video. That makes sense. Like, if you could put an underwear model in your music video, what would you put her in?
And she's 41 and she looks fantastic.
She looks
fantastic. I mean, she's not Lenny Kravitz. 50's fantastic.
Well, no, but she looks great in this music video. The relationship, I don't know, it's convincing enough. I guess I can't really...
I don't know. Pedro Pascal is a pretty cool guy. He's Chilean.
Yeah, but they're just like snuggling this whole video. Like, that's all they're doing.
It's a snuggle fest. Yeah,
it's a snuggle vid, and then she pours water on the floor. It's such a weird video to react to. Like, knowing what those other Sia music videos, like, I just wish there wasn't the context for those, or this wasn't on the Vivo account. Like, this is, I don't know if I watch too many music videos or something, but this is the thing that confuses me on so many levels.
Well, Sia, you confused us. I hope you're happy.
Maybe that's what she wants, though, right? That's why I'm confused. Like, maybe Sia is at a deep level, like, that's her way of screaming art in the background. By, like, doing this now.
I thought it would have been more overt, though. She's trying to hide it.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I think the top music video this week is going to be Wet Dreams.
I think it's going to be Wet Dreams by J. Cole, directed by our buddy Ryan Stake, who's been on this podcast. That's how we should say it from now on. He's been
on this podcast. I'll leave that to you. This is a great music video because this song is very explicit in, like, the literal meaning of the word explicit.
It's so literal. Like, I love this J. Cole album so much. And this song, like, I like the beat and, like, the vibe of it, but I couldn't listen to it more than twice because it's too vivid. It's too specific. Like, I don't want to think about it that much, J. Cole.
And the topic that you would be thinking about is... basically losing your virginity.
Not losing your virginity. J. Cole losing his specific virginity. his tangible virginity is what this song...
In graphic detail, from. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what
Ryan does with it is super fun.
Yeah. Why don't you tell, what does he do with it?
Well, he essentially, like, plays out the narrative, but with two puppy dogs, which is great because essentially, like, the concept of the song is about, you know, he's talking about losing his virginity with another girl his age in, like, in middle school, high school. What is he, 16, I think he says. Mm-hmm. And so, like, essentially the song is about puppy love, and it's a very, like, poppy feeling song, and, like, you know, like, it's kind of, like, summery, would you say?
Yeah, I'd say it's a summer jam. Yeah.
Some a little bit of a summer jam, even though this song came out this album came out in January, or excuse me, December. It's essentially like these two puppy dogs interacting with each other, and that, like, dogs are weird animals, and they, like, bite and sniff each other in weird places sometimes, and when you balance that, and when you put that in front of a, like, song lyric where J. Cole's, like, looking at her butt or something, you know, like, talking about, you know, having sex, like, it makes it seem like these two dogs are falling in love with each other and kind of playing out the concept of the song.
Now you're dancing around a very important topic here, Doug.
These two dogs are fucking? Is that what you're going to say?
No, I thought maybe it was like a few seconds where I thought, oh no, this is where this is going. But the female dog in this is the exact same breed and bears a striking resemblance to Layla, your parents' dog.
Yes, probably. I don't know if it's the exact same breed.
It's 100% the same
breed. Okay, King Charles Cavalier, you're probably right.
It is 100% a King Charles Cavalier.
And then that's the female dog in this video.
And Layla is a female dog.
Right, and then the male dog is like a big German Shepherd. They're both puppies, though.
They are, yeah. You can.
But the German Shepherd still looks like twice the size.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's also where, like, so throughout the whole video, like, it's all from dog POV, essentially the whole video. But you do see the owner's legs and the tiny, you know, Layla dog, as we'll call it, is got a lady owner. And the German Shepherd has a male-looking owner. Mm-hmm. You don't really ever see who they are.
Isn't J. Cole the male dog owner?
Well, that's what you're meant to assume, but I don't remember seeing J. Cole's like face in this video at any point.
Yeah, watch the beginning of the video again. Oh, it starts out with him.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, yeah. You're right. But then it's just legs the whole time.
Then it's just legs until the very end. And right as I was at the height of thinking these dogs are going to start humping each other, then it goes over to the bed and we just see the legs of J. Cole and his lady lover in there.
Yeah, so, right. And the dogs are kind of just like playing on the floor.
Yeah, as dogs will do.
Right. Right, no matter what you're doing.
And there's just some like funny jokes in this, like you mentioned when J. Cole is talking about her, like her butt and stuff.
Right.
It's just like the dog's butt with a tail wagging. Just like, you know, kind of goofy stuff that I think makes the video pretty endearing. I really like this video.
Yeah, I think like the humor that like you find like in like humor layered in a lot of Ryan Stakes music videos. Mm-hmm. I really love the way he kind of works it into videos. Like it's always like very appropriate. Like sometimes it's like a lot more in your face. This stuff is a lot more subtle in this video, and I think that it makes sense for this song and the mood that this song is kind of brings versus like that what was it, Freaky song? The
Freak by Stevie Aoki, Diplo, Darrero, and Steve.
Yeah, Jones. Which is also a comedy video, but it's obviously a lot more in your face.
If anyone remembers, it's the video where people look like they're doing, you know, something sexual, but then it pans out and they're just doing like household chores.
Right. In increasingly ridiculous ways. So anyway, that's a really fun video. I really enjoyed the J. Cole videos. They've all been pretty. The J. Cole videos from this album have all been very, very, very varied, which is a terrible way to say that. But they've been all over the place, and he's done a bunch. But this, I think, is my favorite from this album so far. He'll probably do 9 more. So what should we do? Should we talk about another music video?
Yeah, what do you want to talk about?
I think I want to hear your thoughts on the Hanacone Fake It music video, which is one from last week, but one that I really loved, directed by Oscar Boysen, who you may remember from, he directed a video, do you remember, Adam, the Lemonade Dutry Shores video?
Oh, yeah.
That Kevin Phillips shot.
Yeah, one of my favorite music videos of the past few months.
Yeah, definitely.
And this is a Vimeo staff pick.
This is a Vimeo staff pick.
So you guys liked it enough for it to be a staff pick. There you go.
It's true. What did you think of this video?
I loved it a lot. And it's tough to really describe it. It follows this woman, Hannah Cohen. I don't know where they are. It's some Caribbean location. I don't know. Did you find out where they are, Doug?
Dominican Republic.
Dominican Republic.
La Ramona.
Yeah, the video is called Fake It. The Dominican Republic, weirdly enough, is the only Caribbean country I've ever been to. And it's very much centered on her. You know, she's got a lot of costume changes in this, a lot of different dresses and stuff.
A lot of outfits. The way it's edited is very the costumes are and what's happening is edited is very interesting because she's like, it's like similarly framed shots of her on a motorcycle, kind of like riding on the back of like a not even a motorcycle, more of like a little dirt bikey Vespa kind of road rider. And she it kind of like jump cuts from her like in the same position in these different outfits. It's got like the same kind of atmosphere, I think, of that Lemonade video. You know, they're kind of just like in a location and kind of like letting the location provide a lot of that atmosphere.
And I can't remember in the Drudy Shores video if that, I think that was Italy, I believe. I think it was actually Venice.
Yeah, it was Italy. It was Italy, yeah. Because they're all like in the boats and stuff.
And the big difference here, like, you know, and this is in Dominican Republic, as we have mentioned. In the Drudy Shores video, there are tons of characters, and you don't really follow any one person. I mean, I can kind of remember a few people from it, but this one, like, you are laser-focused on Hannah Cohen.
Right.
And it really and she's always looking directly into the camera and singing directly into the camera for the most part. And you... I think this video kind of hinges on you sort of, like... falling in love with her a little bit. I don't know. It's like you have to be really magnetically attracted to her.
It's shot in a way like it's like somebody's along this ride with her.
Yeah, exactly. Like you are like there with her, and the enjoyment you get on this video, I think, is directly, you know, correlates to like how intrigued you are by her, which is, I mean, from a directorial standpoint, that's a huge risk, right?
Right.
Like you could have somebody who is like not compelling at all, and then this video flop. But I think Hannah Cohen is so compelling in this video, so to an extreme degree that it's just like such a memorable video with really nothing happening in it. I mean, she's just kind of like tooling around the Dominican Republic. There's no real events in it. So I was really, really impressed by this video. I loved it.
I think it's all on Oscar kind of just like knowing how to just capture the atmosphere of a location and represent it in the video. And then, you know, it seems like Hannah is able to kind of carry her part as well, because you definitely can do kind of like, to borrow your term, fall in love with her. But like the atmosphere of this location, and it feels very like authentic. Like it doesn't feel like they're running around going to like tourist locations to shoot this video, or even like locations that are like, you know, like everything just feels very like organic and energetic. And kind of like fast paced, and just like like the way you would experience somewhere if you were going there to experience it, and not necessarily to like go there to shoot a music video.
Right. And it's interesting, like when she's on the motorcycle, you just like flip between all these different shots of her on motorcycles with different people in different outfits. But you're always connected, like the whole thread that ties the video together is this eye contact she has with you and this relationship she has with you, which is kind of unique for a music video. I mean, it sounds kind of simple, but there are I see fewer and fewer music videos that are like striving to make a personal like connection with you as a viewer. It's more like addressing a general group, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
And this one very, very much feels like kind of like a one-to-one relationship.
Yeah, like it, you know, a lot of times, like, for example, like, if you look at the Solange Losing You music video, which is a music video I really, really love, and I think it's a video that really, like, captures an atmosphere really well, but I feel like Solange's performance in that video still feels like she's performing for a larger audience. Where like the performance that Hannah Cohen gives in this video is way more subdued, and so I think that's like a place to kind of see that contrast.
Yeah, it's her. I mean, it's a very, very subdued performance. There's not a lot going on there. Not to say that it's not good, but it's
no, because what's there is like really, really ripe. You know, like really strong.
Totally.
I almost said ripe, which would have been weird. I think
it's so ripe, dude.
It's so fucking ripe. I don't know. Neither we didn't do the same accent, and I don't know what accent either of us did.
And Hannah Cohen's album is called. This caught my eye. It's called The Pleasure Boy.
And her, that's my nickname.
And the cover of it is interesting because it's all these cakes, these white cakes piled up on top of each other, and then her with like these kind of like Veronica Curl hairdo style curve things, and which is interesting because if you are familiar with the artist Will Cotton, who paints women, naked ladies, in kind of like a motif of like cakes and stuff. He painted the cover of Katy Perry's Teenage Dream.
Oh, yeah, okay, neat. Naked ladies. What the fuck was that?
Definitely like an homage to that, which I always enjoy when something's
when you pick up on stuff like that.
Yeah. One more. I think we did it. I think we did it up
really. Oh, we're going to wrap it here. Okay,
we can wrap it here. We're at like an hour 20. I think we're.
Oh good. Shit! Okay, that's fine. I did like. There was other videos that were good this week, but there's other ways for you to find out about them through our website.
Yeah, you could go to imvdb.com and you could go to browse and you could click on best new music videos, and like if you're like short on time, you're like one of those moms, you know.
Yeah, mom on the go.
Yeah, mom on the go. That's like where you want to find the shit to watch.
This is where the ripe stuff is. This is an appropriate place to use the word ripe.
Because we're not going to show... I mean, on that page, like, if you come back in, like, a week, there's not going to be, you know, 80 music videos for you to watch. There is going to be 10.
But there's 10, ten new ones.
But they're going to be really good music videos.
They're going to be ripe.
Yeah, they're going to be super ripe. And yeah, that's where you're gonna find them. We're nearing our 50,000th music video. What are we gonna do on our 50,000th? Oh my god, why can't I talk? Our 50,000th music video. What are we gonna do to party?
Well, we're each gonna get a bottle of rosé, and we're gonna get on Skype and just drink it as we look into each other's eyes through the computer screen, which is impossible because in order for my eyes to display on your screen, I need to look into the camera.
Right. Yeah. That's one of us has to compromise.
Right. We just go back and forth.
Yes. So if you actually, I frequently go to Best U Music videos because all my favorite stuff is there. Like I keep watching the Brandon Flowers Warren Fu video.
Such a good one.
That's a place. Yeah, you can just keep going back, checking out all the good stuff, all the hits, go to iTunes, subscribe to this podcast, and in a few days, Music Video Chats will be up on iTunes, and you can subscribe to that too.
Yeah, and you get up to date on episode. We're four deep on that podcast.
Four going deep. Strong. We were 152 deep on this podcast. So, we got you beat. Sorry, Doug.
Well, I'm part of we.
Right. So. Yeah. So you beat yourself. I'm sorry about that. I didn't plan it this way. It just
sounds like my Friday night.